Sports Hour on the Score is brought to you by Euro Partners. Visit europartners.com, uropartners.com. This segment, though, is brought to you by Dell. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business tech advisor. Bob Kravitz, been covering Indianapolis sports for a long, long time. He will join us coming up in 20 minutes. I think the Colts have fallen below the Bears in terms of NFL franchises with stability. They don't know if Andrew Luck is going to miss a second straight season. Josh McDaniels just backed out. They've got four coaches under contract who are going to be there and are going to be thrust upon the next head coach. Chris Ballard, the GM, is maybe going to hire Dave Tobe. Maybe he's going to hire some people from Philly. He's talking about how the rivalry's back on with the Patriots, which is kind of hilarious given that the Patriots still have Belichick and Brady and the Colts have nobody. But that's where we're at. So it is a crazy time in the NFL, and we'll talk to Bob Kravitz about that coming up in about 20 minutes. But I saw the teaser for this. I recorded inside the NFL, but I was at the Hawks game last night, so I did not have a chance to watch it yet. But when Twitter showed me the clip of the play call, the Philly special, the play at the goal line where fourth and goal, 1.5 yard line, Trey Burton throws the ball to Nick Foles. Nick Foles is mic'd up, and Doug Peterson is mic'd up, and we get the exchange. And I could not believe, like, unbelievable for NFL films, I could not believe that the anecdote or the detail that comes out of this we did not know after the Super Bowl, but see if you could pick up on it. Here is from inside the NFL, NFL Films, how the play call went down that led to Trey Burton throwing the ball in the Super Bowl to Nick Foles.
We're going for it right here. We're going for it right here.
You want Philly, Philly?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Philly special. Ready? Here we go, here we go. Tonight! Easy, easy! Kill, kill! Lane, Lane! Let's go! Let's go! Let's go! Yeah, you like it? Yeah, bro!
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it right there.
Awesome!
There's two.
Everything today.
Let's go, B-Dog.
Catch him and throw him.
Got more catches than Tom does.
Hey, I'll tell you. Did a little acting right there.
Yeah, boy.
It worked.
Good job, buddy.
I'm waiting for that one.
Great job, man. Well,
let's go. Let's keep it rolling, baby.
Great throw. Great throw by Trey.
A great throw.
So there's, to me, amazing moments throughout that entire thing. Right? Like the guy on the sideline saying to Nick Foles, you've got more catches than Tom does, is a really cool thing in the moment. We're all saying it at our Super Bowl parties, online, whatever the case may be. Really cool to hear that. But at the very beginning, there's a little bit of a mashup in there audio-wise, but that's just the NFL Films music. We did not edit this in terms of the time sequence. The first voice you hear is the head coach of the Eagles, Doug Peterson, saying we're going to go for it. And then the next voice you hear is Nick Foles suggesting the play call. So it was not Doug Peterson's play call. It was Nick Foles' play call. And then listen to the amount of time it takes for Peterson to say, okay.
We're going for it right here. We're going for it right here.
You want Philly, Philly?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
That is so cool to me. 2.5 seconds. And if you watch the video, and obviously this is radio, we don't have the video component, but if you watch the video, Peterson tells Foles, we're going for it. But it looks like he was like almost looking off a little bit, like the scoreboard or clock time, yard line, like whatever. Like, you know what I mean? He's not eye-locked with Nick Foles. But he's like, we're going for it, as Foles is coming off the sideline. Foles takes an instant, 1 second, and says, Philly, Philly. And Peterson then turns and looks right at Foles. It was like he stared into his eyes. And he was like, yeah, he's serious. All right, yeah, let's do it. And then he goes forward and does it. Like, I just think about that play call and where maybe you thought it was dumb. Maybe you thought it was one of the gutsiest play calls in the history of football, which is where I come out on it. But wherever you are in that, like the magnitude of that play call in that spot, in that situation in the game, up three, Patriots getting the ball in the second half, trying to, you know, dethrone the dynasty that is Brady and Belichick. It took them 2 seconds to make that play call. Play it for me again, Campy.
We're going for it right here. We're going for it right here.
You want Philly, Philly?
Yeah, let's do it.
I can't imagine like a decision of that magnitude being able to make it so quick. And we talk about it, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody, criticizing coaches, and they've got to think on their feet, and they got all these things going on, and play calling, and clock management, and game theory, and strategy, and all of that stuff. But to be able to make that decision, to make that call in that instant when it's suggested to you by your quarterback, just if you work with people, I would imagine that that amazes you. Like, we spend more time debating, like, the rules for can't do it as a show. Are we going to have this guest on today? How are we going to handle it when this person is off? What's the best way to handle when Jay did the great job with the 15 guests in one segment? Like, what's the best way to handle that? Like, that was not a 2-second conversation. But this guy, both of their legacies are rotting on it. They're in Philadelphia. It's not exactly a forgiving market. There's over 105 million people watching it around the country, countless more million around the world, and they call the, yeah, let's go pretend like you're checking the ball at the line of scrimmage, direct snap to the running back, hand it to the tight end who used to be a quarterback in high school, and throw it to the quarterback play, the backup quarterback play. Oh, yeah, we haven't been running it all year. We installed it before the NFC Championship game. We've ran it 6 times in practice. No big deal. We'll do it against Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl. Cool. 1-1000, 2-1000. Sounds good. Like, that level of confidence in each other, I just found to be insane. And, by the way, makes you understand why all of the guys on the Eagles love playing for Doug Peterson. Like, it's his call, but it was suggested to him by his quarterback, and he went with it. Had you heard that yet, Jay? Had you heard or seen that audio? Or did you take away from it as much as I did? Because I was blown away by it.
I saw it on the way in, and my first response was the same as yours, was, wow, the trust that he showed. Like, all right, let's do it. YOLO, right, as the kids say?
I hear that's what the kids say.
Yeah, I mean, that to me, a play that risky to just automatically almost say, yeah, let's go for it. That was, like, impressive.
And it was cool, too, like in terms of like a measuring contest almost, or like an ego contest, where Peterson's like, let's go for it right here. And Foles is like, well, yeah, of course we're going for it. Let's do Philly.
A little smile comes on his face, too.
Oh, because
when he suggests it.
Like, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, okay, I see you. We're not going to turn around and hand this ball off to LeGarrette Blount. That's what they're expecting us to do. Like, a risky play call there is play action. You know what I mean? Like, you've got the better offensive line. You're leading. The obvious play call there is turn around, hand the ball to your bruising running back, LeGarrette Blount, behind the better offensive line, and give him some redemption playing against his old team. Right? Like, that's the call that we all expected. Give the ball to LeGarrette Blount. But we see goal line plays get stuffed all the time because that's too predictable. So, okay, let's take it up a notch. We are going to do play action. We're going to throw instead of run. All right, wow, we're putting the ball in Nick Foles' hands. Pretty aggressive. Then let's put the ball in Nick Foles' hands and have him do something that he doesn't normally do. Maybe it's rolling out. Maybe it's something really creative like that. Like, wow, that would be an incredibly aggressive play call. No. We're not going to do that. We're going to take the ball out of LeGarrette Blount's hands and out of Nick Foles' hands and out of our kickers, off his kicker's feet, and we are going to give the ball to the tight end to throw the football. It is, I think, one of the most insane play calls ever, and how it came about in that amount of time should go down in NFL history. Like, Nick Foles is a legend for that. And do you not think it's insane that Doug Peterson did not say that Nick Foles suggested it after the game? Like, how did that not come out? Everyone's asking him about the play. Everyone's writing up the play. Everyone's giving Peterson credit for it, and they should. Like, he ultimately has to make the call, and he designed the play and all of that. Like, I'm not saying Peterson should get credit taken away from him, but to me, I feel like we should have known that at Doug Peterson's post-game press conference after the game. Am I crazy? That's a historic moment in NFL history to have a quarterback suggest that play call and have it work in the Super Bowl.
I wonder if it is, though. I wonder if a suggestion of a play is that out of a thing between them. You know, we'd have to know their relationship better. But maybe he never thought to mention it, or maybe he just wanted the credit. Everyone's praising me and my brave play call. Right. I'll take that play. I'll take it, sure.
Maybe. And I don't think that there's anything sinister behind it. And you're right. Like, who knows? The percentage of times that the quarterback, I know for a fact, we all do, that they, of course, collaborate. And they talk about plays. You see coaches all the time be like, what do you want to run here? And then they'll suggest it. And then they'll be like, okay, cool. But you would think that a play like that, when everyone's asking about it, and it's like, actually, Nick suggested it. That's just another layer to me to the Nick Foles story that I find to be pretty insane.
Could it just be heat of the moment? You honest in that moment, you just straight don't remember?
Sure. Yeah. Again, I don't think it's anything sinister on Peterson's part. I just think it's kind of crazy. Peterson asked 100 questions about it after the game. Nick Foles asked 100 questions about it after the game. The guys in the huddle all asked 100 questions. I mean, it was the story of the Super Bowl was that play call. And no one was like, yeah, actually, Nick Foles made that play call. I'm glad it got out. Play it again. Play it one more time, Campy, because just like think about that short period of time.
We're going for it right here. We're going for it right here.
You want Philly, Philly?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
So cool. And he calls it Philly, Philly, but they told us afterwards it was the Philly special. Do you think it's because Philly, Philly is really corny? And people mock Dilly Dilly? Or am I like overthinking this way too much like I have a tendency to?
B.
Okay.
Yes, you are overthinking it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
It's patently absurd to think that way.
Patently absurd. Mark Grody is in doing updates at 12:30 today. So I'm now very hypersensitive to my own parenthetical thoughts, deep voices, pauses, and adverb usage. Mark Grody. People said my impression of myself sounds a little bit like Bill Walton. Which I'll take. That is the worst pass in the history of the Sacramento Kings franchise. They should be outlawed in every way.
The problem is you can't quote Grateful Dead songs.
No, I cannot. But I can quote Bill Walton pretty well.
Grateful Dead is a band. Mm. Yeah, very popular.
Tie-dye, right?
Sure. Yes. Right. That's good. Actually, that's good. For you, that's pretty good. Good
thank
job.
You. I appreciate the backhanded compliment. Chris Dunn, not out of the concussion protocol, but improving. Still no timetable on his return. And Chris Dunn wearing braces after losing the pieces of multiple teeth when his head hit the floor in that game. He says he used to play football, so he'll be good, but it was a scary fall. So still no timetable on the return of Chris Dunn. Bulls have the T-Wolves on Friday, and then when's the next game after that?
Good question.
All right, I wasn't sure like how many more games we were thinking on done. We'll look at the schedule to see how much time is off between Friday's game and the next one, but it sounds like still a couple of games away for Chris Dunn. Insane Super Bowl fallout affecting the Colts in Indianapolis. Where does Chris Ballard go from here? Is Dave Tobe going to get a job? Are they at fault for what happened with Josh McDaniels? Lots going around here. We'll talk to Bob Kravitz coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Those are good quotes. That is projecting a good face, but it is not a good situation for Chris Ballard, who we obviously know well. Around these parts here in Chicago, the general manager of the Colts having to meet the media and discuss why Josh McDaniels isn't the head coach in Indianapolis and he's back in New England. The audio brought to you by Indeed. Are you hiring? With Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates in an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/hire. A really big story, Super Bowl fallout with ramifications throughout the league. Bob Kravitz covers the Colts, Indianapolis sports. He's been there for a long, long time. You could get his work at WTHR.com. Follow him on Twitter at BKravitz. Bob, appreciate the time. I don't know sure. If it's the craziest story in your time in Indianapolis, but I'd imagine this is pretty far up there.
It's right there with the Pacers-Pistons brawl and Peyton Manning leaving. It's right there with bizarro world stories that we've had a chance to cover, for sure.
Do you put any blame on the Colts for how this played out?
No, the only thing I think that you can blame the Colts for, and Chris Ballard took responsibility for it today, is that they made the announcement that he had agreed to terms and they set up a time for the press conference before he actually signed on the dotted line. He had made a verbal commitment. Keep in mind, Ballard and McDaniel shared the same agent, Bob Lamont. So the Colts felt comfortable in moving ahead and telling the media, be at Lucas Oil Stadium at 4 o'clock. And maybe that was the one small mistake that they made. But quite honestly, I've looked at this from every angle. I don't know what they could have done differently. I mean, they went through the process. They, made it clear to him what they had to offer. Andrew Luck seems to be progressing. So, I think even though the Colts end up with egg on their face here, they're the ones who are victimized. They're the ones who are left at the altar.
Why do you think Josh McDaniels made the decision that he did?
I think he feels like if he wasn't given hard and fast assurance, he was given every indication that once Bill Belichick retires, he'll be the guy. they sweetened the pot on his contract. Excuse me. They sweetened the pot on his contract. But the only way that this makes any sense for Josh McDaniels is if he has the feeling that he will be the head coach in waiting in New England.
We're talking to Bob Kravitz, WTHR.com and WTHR-TV. He's been covering Indianapolis sports and the Colts for a long, long time. I agree with you that, could have had him sign on the dotted line. It happened with the Bears and Dave McGinnis back in 1999. You would think that they would close that loophole and allow coaches to sign on the dotted line while they're still coaching other places. But the perception now of the Colts is, right, you got crazy owner Jim Irsay who meddles. You've got Andrew Luck who already
which
missed
is not,
the...
Which is not true. I mean, Jim Irsay, I know what the national view of him is, but he's really just a sounding board and a rubber stamp for his GMs.
Okay.
The perception is that he meddles because he says outrageous things in the public sphere. He loves talking to the media and sometimes says stuff he shouldn't say, but he's not meddlesome. And yeah, he's got his idiosyncrasies and certainly his demons with drug addiction. But by and large, he's an owner who spends and will do anything to win.
So you think in the quest to find a coach or attract free agents that Jim Irsay is either neutral or a net positive?
Yeah, I really do. And you look at the people that he's brought in. I talked to Tony Dungy at the Super Bowl. And he was making the point that Jim Irsay is one of the best selling points for a new GM or a new coach. And Bill Polian will tell you the same thing, that he's extraordinarily easy to work with. One of the bigger reasons being is that he is, unlike most owners for whom this is just a play toy, their team is, this is everything to Jim. And he grew up in football. He was actually the Colts GM for a couple of years, many, many years ago. So you can explain things to him. What takes 20 minutes with anybody else takes 10 minutes. So he's a very sharp football guy with very good instincts.
So that's interesting because earlier in the show when I was talking about this, I'll be honest with you, I had said that with all this dysfunction now and where they are and operating behind the eight ball and the fact, frankly, that Matt Nagy chose the Bears over the Colts despite his relationship with Chris Ballard, there aren't many teams where I feel confident that the Bears organization is ahead of, but Indianapolis is now one of them. Is that fair in your mind?
Looking at the Bears defense, you would know better than me. I know they ranked pretty highly. So, you're talking about a Colts team that was last in offense and last in defense in most categories, and the Bears at least have a defense and a solid running game and a young quarterback. So I think the Bears have a lot to offer. The Colts, it's an article of faith that Andrew Luck will be back. He gave an update today. He's still not throwing a football, but he's doing a lot of work on strengthening his arm, which seems like we've been hearing that for about 17 years. Right. And they have the third pick in the draft. They have $80 million or so to play with in free agency. So I think this team could get back to the point where it's competitive in the AFC South in relatively short order. But, of course, everything comes back to Andrew Luck and his availability.
And do you just not know? Like, do you not know about Andrew Luck, or are you just going off of what they say?
Well, yeah, we don't know. And look, right now they're saying, you know, the Colts are saying that it does not appear that he's going to need another surgery. But as Chris Ballard said, you know, in the very next question that was posed, you know, with the human body, you don't know. I mean, he may come out for OTAs and be winging the ball all over the place, and then on day three, he feels like that right arm is going to fall off. So you never completely know if he's back until we see him on opening day, you know, in next season.
Bob Kravitz for just another minute or two on the weird situation. It's four coaches that are under contract and will be mandated to the next head coach, right?
That's the way it's looking. I think that was a big mistake, signing those guys before they had McDaniels in-house. You know, and completely committed in terms of, you know, getting his name on the dotted line. So, yeah, they're kind of stuck with these guys. Ballard, you know, sung their praises today, said that they were good fits for the organization. But, you know, if you're that new head coach, you want all your own guys. And so I think it's a very uncomfortable situation that any new coach is going to walk into with assistants who aren't necessarily his assistants.
And it's Dave Tobe gets a call?
I think there's a chance. But, you know, he was the front runner going into this thing. We all kind of connected the dots, I guess. And, you know, given his long relationship with Ballard, we thought he would be, you know, interviewed. But he never even got an interview. So, you know, I think Frank Reich is somebody they're very interested in. I saw a name today that does not intrigue me at all, Dan Campbell, who worked as an interim head coach with the Miami Dolphins. You know, Dave Tobe sounds like a good idea, but I just don't know what Chris Ballard really feels about him as a head coaching prospect.
And last thing, what do you think has been revealed? Because I said now, if you're Josh McDaniels, you can only be a head coach one place.
Correct.
No other team will hire you. Like, what do you think has
Correct.
Been revealed about him?
Oh, I think his character. I think this is a really sleazy, low-down, dirty thing to do. Not only are you impacting the Colts organization and maybe impacting them for several years, but worse yet, you've got these three, four assistants who've not only uprooted themselves but have uprooted their families, and now they're not going to work for the guy for whom they thought they were going to work. And that's no way to operate. So I think Josh McDaniels has been revealed. I think he's toxic now. I think he's radioactive. And you're absolutely right. The only place he's ever going to work is in New England.
Bob Kravitz, great column at WTHR.com. We appreciate the time on what I know is a busy day.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Bob Kravitz. We'll react after the update.
From the Chicago Wolves.
God.
You know, Danny, your impersonation of you is way better than me doing it.
Well, I know myself pretty well, Mark.
Yeah, that was, I mean, you actually, the funny part is, you know, when you do impersonations, you exaggerate. And you actually went deeper than your regularly deep voice. So I thought it was great.
Well, people are like, that's your broadcasting voice. I'm like, no, that's just like my resting voice. So right. I can go deeper. Like, it is possible.
Right, you're not faking.
No.
That's the way you sound.
Yeah. I'm glad you're here.
Are you?
Yes, of course.
We're okay?
Yeah. Oh, we're great.
Okay.
We're great.
Okay.
You let me try on a World Series ring. You're my guy.
I got to get some gas. I got to feed the dog. I got to buy some milk. Take advantage of the best ticket value in Chicago with a Chicago Wolves fan 4-pack, 4 tickets, 4 hot dogs, 4 sodas, and popcorn, all at one low price. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for information. The Bulls losing streak is 7 games, and next up, Jimmy Butler, Tom Thibodeau, and the Minnesota Timberwolves Friday night at the United Center. Perhaps more urgent, though, is tomorrow, NBA trade deadline. We'll see if the Bulls have anything else up their sleeves. Blackhawks host Dallas tomorrow after last night's 3-2 loss to Calgary. And Josh McDaniels' agent even telling McDaniels that rejecting the Colts was the biggest mistake of his career. I'm Mark Grody, and you are listening to Chicago's number one ranked sports station and the new radio home for the Chicago Bulls. Bulls host Minnesota on a Friday. The broadcast will begin that night at 8:15, a little later start. This is 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Thank you, Mark Grody. Yeah, I just saw that on Twitter. It's Bob Lamont, he's kind of like the Drew Rosenhaus or like the Scott Boras of coaching agents. He like represents everybody, represents every sports exec, GM, coach, and at least in the football world. So I guess Drew Rosenhaus would have been a better comp there. He has terminated his relationship with Josh McDaniels, saying it was a mistake. So he represents McDaniels and Chris Ballard, and the agent is siding with Ballard over McDaniels. And that makes sense from an agent standpoint, because Chris Ballard is a GM in good standing with his front office, that if he got fired in a few years, maybe he'd get a second shot at it. And Josh McDaniels, he gets one more. He gets one more shot with one team, maybe. Like, that's the list. So if you're the agent, you don't know when that next commission is coming. You don't know if Robert Kraft's going to change his mind. You don't know if Bill Belichick's going to work one more year, 5 more years, 15 more years. So pretty easy decision, I would say, to cut ties with the guy who comes out looking very sleazy in Josh McDaniels and side with the up-and-coming GM in Chris Ballard. How about that from Kravitz, by the way? Instantly being like, yeah, it's top three crazy story I've covered in Indianapolis sports history. Oh, yeah, what are the other two? Oh, Peyton Manning, you know. He's got a children's hospital basically named after him, legend, statue, face of the franchise, him leaving, and the malice at the palace. Oh, okay. Yeah, fairly crazy sports day in Indianapolis. But they're in rough shape. It's interesting to hear that about Irsay, though. And maybe that's like the hometown bias for it, because it's great for a media member, for Kravitz to have an owner who's accessible and gives quotes and content and all of that. But you would think that even if he doesn't meddle as much in football decisions as it appears from the outside, you would think it would be a negative forget the addiction part for a bit if you can, like the instability that comes with that, which is we all can sympathize with it. But also just, that doesn't strike me as a very stable thing, that like at your Wednesday press conference, you might have to answer for something that your owner said on Twitter. Like, say what you will about the McCaskies, they don't bring a lot of like shame and distraction to the Bears. Maybe you have shame because of the record, but not because of outward action that they do. So there's kind of a Jerry Jones, Jim Irsay feel to it, where it's just another layer where like your boss is publicly critiquing you all the time, at least more so in the case of Jerry Jones than Irsay in terms of the critiquing side. But you never know when you're walking to the podium or walking in front of your locker and the owner said something that was a distraction. There are not many teams in the NFL that have to deal with that. Just off the top of my head, Indy, Dallas, Washington. Is that it? Places where owners are going to be a distraction because of like what they say? They're just all so buttoned up and careful and corporate and rich. Shad Khan occasionally in Jacksonville, but not really, and nobody cares because it's Jacksonville.
Has Jimmy Haslam said anything, or is it just that he always does dumb stuff?
I think it's more doing dumb stuff, but still, I mean, I guess that'd be on the list. He's closer to that list of guys than not, but it's a small list, so I would think it'd be a pretty big factor, again, if you think about how your boss matters so much for the enjoyment level that you have at a job in Indianapolis. But that was an interesting thing to contextualize from Bob Kravitz. I certainly, from the outside, had always looked at him as being meddlesome and a net negative as an owner. And he said it was more neutral or even positive going on in Indy. The escalation of what's going on in baseball continues to ramp up, so we can circle back around to that. And, of course, we have transition coming up at 1 o'clock with Bernstein and Goff on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Spiegel and Parkins on The Score. Spiegel is back on Monday. I'm solo again tomorrow, and then I'm off on Friday as well. Show is brought to you by Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. A bad cold and flu season is upon us. The main difference between them is the flu brings a fever. Be prepared with the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer, backed by more than 70 clinical studies. That actually has been useful recently, Jay, because you were out yesterday, and the cold has been going around. I think we all got each other sick. Spiegel was sick. I was sick. Campy, you must have the immune system of I don't even know. Or have you been sick also?
Not now, but I mean, I missed a day a few weeks back.
Oh, yeah.
And I never missed time for being sick.
But none of us got the flu, right? No fever?
No fever. So far, so good.
All right. What about you, Campy?
When I had it, like, around the holidays, yeah, it was the flu.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you for not giving it to us. I appreciate that. We just had a common head cold. So, there you go. The more you know. That's why you should listen to the sponsorship reads, like the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Bruce Levine with some news. And, Jay, you made me aware of it during the break, so go ahead. Why don't you say it?
Looks like the White Sox are close to a radio deal with WGN, which is the weirdest thing I can imagine in Chicago sports broadcasting.
It's pretty weird, right?
It's so strange.
The Cubs being synonymous with WGN for, oh, I don't know, a century. And then now they have the other team in town.
That means that the Sox will not win for, what, 106 years?
I think that's how it works. Yep. I think that is definitely how it works.
I think you're left off Wheel of Fortune now.
Woo! Yeah. Tough times for White Sox fans, by the way, with that Wheel of Fortune thing. Like, it just, it goes around, it goes viral on social media. Way more people see it online than will ever watch it on Wheel of Fortune. Bad luck.
I just laugh at this point.
They didn't say all Chicago teams. It's just, it's the clue. You know, they chose a baseball team, a hockey team, a football team, and a basketball team, and they chose the baseball team with more fans.
Yeah, they put the teams up there that people think about.
Then why were the Blackhawks on there?
Oh, checkmate.
Kiss the rings, Rick. Kiss the rings.
All six, or?
I like when you guys fight. I like it. I like the infighting on the on.
He's just excited about Gordon Mankata.
That's Johan Beckham to you.
That's right. That's right. I like the infighting on the I'm Fat podcast. There should be more of it. When's the night? When's episode 3, by the way?
Tomorrow is the plan, if you let us out of our meeting early enough.
What meeting?
Our post-show meeting.
What do you mean, let you out of the meeting?
All right.
I'm flying tomorrow. No post-show. How about this? No post-show meeting tomorrow.
Deal.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, cool.
People can send us Ask a Fat questions using the hashtag I'm a Fat.
Okay, good. Get that going. Download it on the Scores website. Both of their Twitter accounts are available for the I'm Fat podcast. But so yeah, Bruce Levine reporting that the White Sox are close to a deal with WGN Radio. And since just an insane broadcasting thing, like you just think about it. Like, and I know this is somewhat self-involved, but you know, I'm here talking. Growing up, I listened to this station all the time. And the teams I was the biggest fans of were the Cubs and the Bulls. But in my lifetime, those teams, when I was paying attention to that sort of thing, had never been on this station. So it had always been separate my entire life. Like, it had always been a separate thing. And I didn't know when, how long it was going to take me to get back to Chicago. I didn't know if I was ever going to get back to Chicago. And then about a year and a half before I do, this station gets the Cubs. And then 1 year after I get here, they get the Bulls. It's like if I could build the station around the teams that I care the most about, it would be those two teams. So it's just an insane thing how the landscape has totally flipped upside down.
I told you guys yesterday when I was listening to highlights from the Bulls-Kings game that, you know, I just saw the description and hit play, and it was still jarring to hear Swirsk's voice as opposed to the TV call.
Yeah.
Like, even though, obviously, I knew it was it had happened, it's hard not to, just the just hearing it was like, oh, okay.
No question. And as people who take a lot of pride in this place, and Campy, you're a big Bulls fan, so it'll hit you. I'm bummed. I mean, I'm excited because I'm going skiing. But what I am going to go to probably the first Bulls game at home when I get back, because it still is a trip for when you're leaving Wrigley and they, you know, put it up there like post-game show on the Score. Or you're going through the stadium and it's being broadcast in the bathrooms or the concourses or wherever, and it's the Score radio broadcast. And then you hear, like, you're at Wrigley Field and they're in a commercial break, and you hear a plug for the Spiegel and Parkin show during the Cubs game is still, to me, an insanely cool thing. Like, I think it's cool every time I hear it. And I haven't heard a promo for us yet during the Bulls games, but I've only listened to like 15 minutes of a Bulls broadcast so far. But also, when last night I'm at the UC for the Blackhawks game, and there's all the signage for WGN. We're going to have signage at the United Center during Bulls games. It's going to be for a broadcast dork. That is so darn cool to me.
Yeah, like how we have the logo with the Cubs.
Yeah.
The score logo with the Cubs. I was like, okay, that's fine. You know, good for us, obviously, from a broadcast perspective. But personally, I'm just like, okay, I'm neutral on the Cubs.
Yeah.
But with seeing the Bulls version of it, I was like, all right, that's pretty awesome.
It's sweet. It's a really cool thing. So
we're getting young shamed. Apparently the White Sox were on WGN at some point in the 50s.
We're getting young shamed. Yeah. Ageists are mad at us.
You guys should know. You think you know sports. The Sox were on GN back in the 50s, right?
I mean, that's
okay,
fine.
Sir, sorry.
That's fine.
Those are the same guys that still blame Matt Thornton for everything with the White Sox.
And, I mean, kind of not the point. Not the point. Like, one team had been synonymous with them for forever, and the Sox and Bulls were both signed to a multi-year agreement on WLS, and so now they're not on the same station. They would not be in the same company in that case, which had been a change, right? So it's just, it's crazy how the world works and how quickly things can change. And, okay, yeah, so if you have to go back to the 50s, it's still a lot of us that don't remember that. Quite a departure from history. And by the way, I don't know if you saw, our guy Jeff Passan is got a sweet gig. He's going to cover the Olympics in Korea. But Major League Baseball has had a war of words in the media. And what's crazy about this is starting very early because there's still 3 more years left on this collective bargaining deal, but there's over 100 free agents that are not signed. And obviously, especially for the Cubs, this matters because the Cubs want a top 3 pitcher, probably Yu Darvish, maybe Cobb or Arrieta. So this is from Jeff Passan on Twitter. He says, as I head to South Korea for the Olympics for a few weeks, some thoughts on the MLB, MLBPA skirmish and where it's headed. Major League Baseball is operating from a position of distinct power right now. The collective bargaining agreement, tilted distinctly toward the teams, is locked in through 2021. This is a potent fact, one the union acknowledged in a recent phone call with approximately 175 players. For a lot of players, this does not sit well. Their eyes are wide open. If clubs are using this CBA as a cudgel, as they are, he's such a SAT guy, it will be a long 3 years. It's not just the free agents now who are pissed either. It's those who see the same freeze in their futures. The question is where the union directs its anger. Thus far, ownership has been the target, and if the union wants to avoid splintering, that will remain the case. Behind the scenes, though, among some players and agents, knives are out for MLBPA Executive Director Tony Clark. Clark oversaw the negotiations, is responsible for them, and an increasing number of people see the union's response to the current climate as curious. They don't understand the plan, either short or long term. What does Clark have going for him? Well, if he can rally support and stabilize his position, he has the most engaged group of players in decades. There is great power in that. Ultimately, this comes down to two things, strategy and unity. Thus far, MLB is winning both battles, and it's compounding it with superior messaging. But don't forget, this is round one of an old-school 15-round fight. This is the story of the 2018 baseball season and beyond. Passan's the best, obviously. We'll talk to him maybe from the Olympics and certainly when he gets back. But it's interesting when you hear anything, you can have no interest in sports unions or the business side of baseball, but there's an argument to be made that the most powerful union in this country is the MLB Players Association, the Baseball Players Union. Some people would disagree with that, some people would not or whatever, but it has absolutely been argued by smarter people than me that is not only the strongest union in sports, but the strongest union in the country. And now they've got splintering among some of the ranks, and if you go into the negotiations not happy with your leader, you're probably going to lose. And they've got 3 years where what will be interesting is, do they take the short-term loss now and get rid of Tony Clark, cut their losses now. Okay, we got a bad deal last time. We're losing this messaging battle. We got 3 years to get our house in order before the real battle comes in the form of the next CBA to right this wrong. Let's get leadership in charge that we all trust, or do they make it right? That's a pretty interesting framing of the argument, because it goes beyond Eric Hosmer not getting a 9-year contract offer or Todd Frazier settling for a 2-year deal. It goes beyond the 100 free agents this year, and next year Machado will be fine and Harper will be fine and the studs will be fine either way because they're the studs. It's about the, whatever it is, 1,500 players that make up Major League Baseball. That math is probably way off now that I say that out loud. Whatever. The 600, 700 players that make up Major League Baseball, and plus the minor leagues and all of that, but like the guys who really have influence, and if they're internally fighting, it's just going to make the ownership position stronger. And for those of you who are pro team over pro player, that's probably good news if you care about the future of the economic system of Major League Baseball. Fun show today. Appreciate you hanging out with us. We will transition to Bernstein and Goff next on The Score.